"Good evening to you, young lady," said a masculine voice behind her. Button turned quickly and faced a young ship's officer, tall and dark with a winning smile. "Oh, you frightened me so I could have dropped right into the deep blue ocean," laughed Button. "But good evening to you anyway. It is a very lovely evening." "What's lovely about this one?" he teased, stepping beside her. "The wind," exclaimed Button, looking far across the sea. "The wind that blows greetings and memories from Sweden." "You are homesick already?" She nodded. "I'm sorry that I'm part of the crew of this ship, where we are forbidden to mingle with the passengers. If I were free, I assure you it would be a privilege to help you get rid of your loneliness." Button eyes twinkled. "Already I've lost a bit of it." "What can I do for you?" he asked eagerly. "Take a greeting back to my homeland." "What shall I say?" "Say that Button is doing fine and that she will dream a certain dream to a finish." "Oh, I'll be glad to carry that message. You're an unusual girl, and that's an unusual message. I like you, but talking to you longer might cost me my job, though perhaps it would be worth it. Good night, Miss Dreamer." He touched two fingers to his cap and, bowing lightly, walked away straight and tall without a backward glance. Later, as Button entered her cabin, she could hear from the happy uproar that her family was waiting for her. "There's something in your bunk just for you, Button," cried her sister Greta, rubbing her hands in excitement, "and nobody knows who brought it." Papa looked very stern, but Mama was smiling, and everyone watched as Button pulled back the curtain, and there it stood, a large basket of the most delicious-looking fruit. Her eyes almost popped from their sockets. She found the note and stuck it in her pocket. After the fruit had been divided and everyone had left happy, she read the note. "See what the wind blew in? And all of it for the girl who likes to dream." She slept with the note under her pillow and dreamed of the young man who had sent it. Only in her dream, she was not sleeping on a hard bunk, but in a bed made of beautiful thorn-free roses. In the morning, she woke up with a smile, and her heart felt light and gay. It was as though her roots were being planted before she reached the new shore, and all because a good-looking young officer had smiled at her and evidently thought her older than her years. Perhaps she would see him again, for after all, he had left her a most delightful gift. That brings us now to Chapter 6, entitled Mama's Way. "This is America," said Papa one morning about 3 weeks after they had moved into the parsonage in Berkeley Hills. "It is called the land of opportunity, but before we find out what it will give to us, we must learn to speak English." "You and Mama can talk good already," said Pelet. "Not well enough, my boy. We can speak enough to make ourselves understood, but the only way we can learn is by trying." Button had never seen Papa in such a gay mood. But then the whole family had entered the United States with hearts beating with excitement, and Papa, like the rest, was engulfed in the newness that was all about them. For days now, the members of the household had shuffled furniture around and moved drapes and curtains. The parsonage had been partly furnished with pieces of furniture from the church's members' attics, discarded things which they had thought would help the pastor's family until they could pick out what was needed. It had been a gracious, kind deed, and Papa and Mama had both been very grateful. "Button," said Papa, "how about trying your first lesson in English this morning? I want you to take Vicky and go downtown and buy her a new dress. What color do you want, Vicky?" "Blue," smiled Vicky happily. "Heavenly blue, like the sky. But how can Button buy me a dress when she can't speak English?"
"That's the best way to learn, dear, by trying to make yourself understood." "We can take the Swedish-American dictionary along," suggested Button, sliding the little book into her purse. "Here," said Papa, "take this." And he handed Button a $5 bill. "You do a good job now. You know I promised Vicky she would get a new dress when we came to our new country, remember?" "Perhaps I should go along," said Mama, looking a bit anxious. "No, Maria, You would do all the talking. Let the girls try for themselves. Mama walked with them to the bus at the corner, giving all sorts of advice. She handed them a piece of paper on which was written the place where the driver should deposit them. Trembling, the girls boarded the bus. They waved at Mama and sat very close together. This was a tremendous experience. What would happen? Vicky looked up at Button with wide, fearful eyes. "Do you think you can do it, Button?" she asked in a low voice. "I'd love a new dress, but how can we buy it when you can't speak the language and don't even understand what is said to you?" "I'll find a way," laughed Button. "I'll talk with my hands." She opened her dictionary to the letter K, looking for the Swedish word klädning, meaning dress in English. "Dress," she whispered to Vicky. "Remember that word because we shall need it. Papa is challenging me. He doesn't think I can do it, but I will buy a dress. You wait and see." Button and Vicky stood in front of the dress rack in Landon's department store. A sales lady came smiling toward them, rattling off a long stream of words which made Button feel very stupid. "Dress," said Button slowly to the sales clerk, pointing to Vicky. "Hurry," she said to her sister. "Find blah in the dictionary." Vicky put her finger on the letter B and turned the pages. Button smiled her prettiest at the lady, showing her the money. The clerk spoke more slowly now, but it meant nothing to the girls. "I can't find that word," sighed Vicky sorrowfully. "Never mind," soothed Button. "See, there on one of the dummies is a blue dress." "Dress. Dress," repeated Button, pointing to the dummy. A light seemed to dawn in the clerk's eyes. She undressed the dummy and held the dress in front of Button. She asked a question. Button nodded, hoping it was the right answer. The lady smiled and ushered Button into the dressing room. She helped Button remove her own dress and slipped the soft blue one over her shoulders. Button tried to protest, but to no avail. A moment later, she stood in front of a three-way mirror and gasped as she looked at herself in the glass. Could this beautiful elf be Button Franzson? The dress was a dream and the prettiest Button had ever seen. Vicky's eyes were wide with wonder. "Oh, Button, you are simply beautiful. Just like a real princess. You must have that dress. It looks as if it were made for you. I'll wait a while, but you must take the money and buy it. Please, Button, do." "But Papa, what would he say, Vicky? It is you who need the dress, but it's so beautiful." "Buy it, Button. If Papa saw you now, he couldn't resist buying it for you. We'll make him understand." Button made no further attempt to make the saleslady understand. She paid for the dress with a trembling heart, and she and Vicky walked from the store carrying a big box between them. "Are you scared, Button?" asked Vicky. "Of course not," said Button. "It's done now. If necessary, I'll work and earn the money to pay for it myself." They walked on to the bus in silence. Both Mama and Papa met them on the parsonage steps. "You really did it, Button. You bought the dress for Vicky," cried Papa happily. Button avoided Papa's eyes. "Almost," she ventured. "But you have the dress in the box," ventured Mama. "But not for Vicky." "Oh, Papa, Papa, I got the darlingest, sweetest, bluest dress you've ever seen. But it's for myself. The lady could not understand that I wanted one for Vicky and... I'll get a job and work for it. I'll pay every penny of it. Please don't be cross with me." Papa smiled. He winked at Mama. "Well, Button, I guess you tried your best, even if the evidence is against you. Poor Vicky. As usual, she gave in to make someone else happy. Mama and I will forgive you this time, and next week we'll take Vicky downtown ourselves. You can be sure, and that little girl shall have a blue dress, too." Button smiled happily. She put on her new dress for the whole family to see and admire. It was a great day, and America was a wonderful country. She just wished that Karen could see her now. There was a freedom in America not present in Sweden. People walked with ease as if they needed not to take thought for the morrow, and they all laughed and played as if life was a wonderful playground and not a place in which to prepare for old age or eternity. It was fun living in this great big land, and the little by little the memories of Sweden faded until it was hard for Button's mind to picture the old familiar places. Of course, succeeding weeks and months brought occasional times of adjustment to all of them, with many a wistful backward look to the peaceful days left behind in Lapland. However, the months and the years moved on as swiftly as a weaver's shuttle. When 3 years had passed since the Reverend Franson and his family had landed in America, all of them seemed happy and contented in the new surroundings, though Button often wondered about Papa. Tenderly, she watched him trying to embrace all the newness, but she feared that he still longed for his homeland and that he would never really take root in this new land. Although he never uttered one complaint, she noticed that his hair was almost white now, and often there was a sad, longing look in his blue eyes. Button was sure it was this feeling of restlessness that had caused Papa to ask his church for a leave of absence and to purchase a small farm out in the country by a lovely lake. He told the church board that he needed a rest for his tired mind, and kind as they were, they let him go when he gave his promise that he would return in a year or two if they still wanted him. The farm was a new experience for them all, and Button found she had time to dream again. Anew and more urgently than ever, the old call came as it had in the little red schoolhouse when she was a very young girl. The call that had lifted her to the highest pinnacle of joy and then thrown her down into the blackness of her own confusion. Now it knocked at her heart's door and begged to be recognized. She had done a bit of writing, a short story, and a small volume of poems, but had not started a book. How could she write in a strange country? How could she express her thoughts in an unfamiliar tongue? Thinking back over the years that had gone by, there was much for which to be thankful. Button had learned many a lesson the hard way. She understood now that friendship, no matter how deep, and love no matter how sincere, can burn out for a lack of fuel to sustain them. In the beginning, full of anticipation, she had awaited each letter from Gunnar and Karen. This was her tie between the new and the old world, and every letter had been full of love and longing. But as the time went by, the intervals between letters became longer and longer, and the letters themselves alarmingly shorter until they contained nothing but a record of the good times her friends were having together. She had been hurt when Gunnar wrote about the weekend trip he and Karen had taken to go mountain climbing, especially since he had elaborated on how much fun it had been. Then came a letter in which he told Button he had given up his dreams of becoming a doctor. "Button," he wrote, "I believe that my father may have been right the whole time. Now that I am an executive in his office with a fine future ahead of me, the light on the forehead and the dark pit are only unpleasant memories. They will never influence my life again. Thank you for helping me to dream that noble dream of someday becoming a doctor. I have given that dream up, but it was fun dreaming it with you." It angered Button to think that Gunnar could let go of his dream so easily. But she did not let it trouble her for long, for he was too far away to affect her life, and each day he seemed to get farther and farther away now that they could no longer dream together. Then one day Button received from him a thick, heavy letter. She took it out to the garden, holding it in her hand a long time before she opened it, for her heart sensed its contents, and she wanted to brace herself against being hurt. And of course she was right. Gunnar had fallen in love with Karen Lund, and he planned to marry her in the near future. He thanked Button with all his heart for the years that had been, calling them beautiful and sweet. But most of all, he thanked her for the gift of Karen. "I know," he wrote, "that this is not causing you pain or sorrow. When you left, I knew our dreams were over, but I doubted that anyone could ever fill your place. Karen did. She is adorable and likes to spring surprises on me as you did, but in a different way. I am sure you don't love me as much as she does, and that you would be most unhappy to leave America and settle down in this godforsaken corner of the world. If she had imagined that this news would hurt, she had been mistaken. Her love for Gunnar was gone. It had either worn out or just faded away, and she was glad that it would be Karen and Gunnar who would find happiness in each other. Karen was more concerned about Button in her letter, and fear crept between the lines as she wrote, "Button, dear, if for some reason you still have any feeling for Gunnar, let me know. I will walk out of his life faster than a lamb can shake its tail, if you ask me. I am afraid that our being always together led to this. We both know that, if you had remained in Lapland, it would never have happened. Although I miss you, I can't help blessing the day you left for America. I will be honest, Button. These years with Gunnar have been the most precious gift I could ever have received." Button crumbled the letter in her hand and tossed it into the wastebasket. She lifted her head nonchalantly. "And all she gave me was some dirt for my funeral," she smiled. And she sat down and wrote her friend a reassuring letter, wishing her happiness and telling her that, after all, Gunnar had just been a passing fancy of youth. She also wrote Gunnar a letter sparkling with fun. It would be her very last letter to him. "You know, Gunnar, life has a way of straightening us all out. I am glad that you never followed me to America, for I have discovered that they don't give away expensive automobiles on street corners, and that people really have to work to get their dollars. I am glad for you and Karen. Love her a lot. She is a darling and dear as can be." So that part of her life was over. It left an empty space in her heart for a while, but a date with a handsome young man soon filled it. It was hard, however, to find a young man that measured up to Gunnar, hard to find one that measured up to her own ideals. Perhaps she never would. She had been admired by more boys than many a girl in her community, and by the time she was 18, she had had 2 proposals. But she had no wish to settle down. Maybe she would be true to her calling and marry her dream. Button had had great difficulty in learning the new language. Now she could laugh over it, but it had not been so funny when she had made embarrassing mistakes because she did not understand. The only way was to laugh at a mistake and learn a lesson from each one. All the rest of the children had progressed well in speaking English, but they had continued in school in the new land. There had been quite a session that day in the parsonage when Button had defied both Papa and Mama. "I don't care how important it is to get a good basic foundation in the new language. I shall not keep on studying. Never, never. I'm through forever with teachers. I think you are both cruel even to suggest it." Mama was very provoked. "There is no shame in learning at any age, and it doesn't matter how old you are when you learn a language," she stormed. "You, Button, are a very stubborn and foolish girl." Button yielded not an inch when Papa put his foot down and said that education was a necessity for all his children. She was determined to win this battle and to show Papa that when it came to principles concerning her own life, she could be as strong and unbending as he was. She was made of the same stuff. "All I'm going to do of importance," she said, tossing her head, "is to write a book, and I certainly don't need years in school to do that." Button tried to ignore the pleading in Papa's eyes, but it softened her a little. "Don't worry about me, Papa," she laughed. "When I write my book, words will pour from me like sugar from a bag. I am going to write humorous things that will make people laugh, you see, not textbooks." Papa and Mama said no more. They knew they would get nowhere with Button, for it was impossible to talk sense to her. Someday she would pay the price for having refused an education. Papa found Button a job doing housework for an American family where nothing but English could be spoken. He was very upset at his oldest daughter's behavior and decided she would have to learn the hard way. But now those years had gone by, and Button spoke English quite well, and she was back with her family on this lovely farm. Several times she tried to start her book, but no words would come. Perhaps she had boasted too much when she had said that writing would pour out from her effortlessly. She had spoken out of ignorance, using words that had no meaning. Button sat by the blue water of the lake below the farm. The lonely, driving restlessness of her spirit had prompted her to leave the family group gathered around the organ to sing their evening hymn. When the long days had ended and the chores had been done, Papa again looked like the preacher he had been for so many years. Button had stayed until the prayers had been said and a chapter read from the big family Bible that had been so carefully packed and lovingly carried from Sweden. A lump had formed in her throat, and a wild knocking on her heart had made her want to cry or run out and throw her arms around a faithful old tree, as she had done when she was a little girl. "Perhaps I miss Gunner after all," she thought. "Perhaps I don't want him to marry Karen." The music from the song floated over the water. There was something so homey about a family singing together around the organ, the voices from the youngest to the oldest mingling in harmony. If only that wild desire to cry had not come, she could have been there too. It always thrilled her to see Papa seated at the organ, his gray locks curling around his ears and forming a curl in the nape of his neck when his hair was as long as it now was. And Mama's face always beamed as she sang. Her eyes twinkled like stars, and the smile on her lip was like a heavenly benediction over those she loved. Nim would lean hard on the organ, and Pelay always stood close to him. Vicky and Greta shared the same hymnal, their faces intent and serious-looking. Calais and Torkel, the other two boys, would have their arms around each other's shoulders, and little Kirsten, her eyes big and wide and blue as blueberries, would nestle close to Mama. What a group they made! It was only Button who was missing, and if they had noticed her absence by now, they would think nothing of it. For wasn't Button like that? Unpredictable, always running off at the strangest times. One moment her voice would sing with laughter, and the next she would be crying. Why? No one knew. She would be sweet and cross to suit her fancy, so they all had stopped trying to understand her. Well, how could she expect her family to understand her, when she couldn't even understand herself? The gentle beauty of the night brought tears to Button's eyes, and a longing crept into her heart. It was a longing for Lapland, for the mountain road, for Gunner running to meet her as he had so long ago, his brown eyes sparkling with happiness. She longed to hear Karen's silvery laughter and to hear the bells chime in Papa's little church on a Sabbath as the white summer night spread its wide wings over her homeland. Perhaps coming to America had been a mistake. Could it be that dreams remained in the land that brought them forth, and that she never would be able to write her book in a strange land? Button longed most of all for her diary. If she only could forget the tragedy of the first one, she might start another. Then in the midst of her thoughts, there seemed to come a voice from within her that spoke to her. "Button," it whispered, "you're doing all right. When tomorrow comes, you will smile again." Over the waters was reflected the flame-tinted sunset sky. She raised her eyes heavenward. What a strange combination of clouds. Surely no artist's brush could capture their wild beauty. And up there in the clouds, there was a door, partly open, right into God's heaven. A smile played on her lips as she was thinking. Mama would say that a soul had just entered heaven and God had not had time to close the door. Mama said such strange things. She had such a childlike belief in the unseen. She literally talked to God, and he always answered her in a voiceless voice, at least so she claimed. Button's head fell into her hands. She remained sitting in that position for a long while as she reached deep, deep, deep down into her soul to try to find the great answer that she knew must be found somewhere. How did Mama get her answers from God? God did not speak in a human voice, or did he? Gently, a hand touched Button's shoulder. "Button," came Papa's voice out of the night, "I wish you wouldn't follow your impulses and run away. This is the first time it's happened during our family worship. I don't like it at all, and believe me, my dear, you are the loser. Button didn't mind Papa's mild scolding. Her heart beat fast with joy. Papa had missed her and had come to find her. Just to have him beside her took that awful loneliness away. She would talk to Papa. She would ask him things. Papa must know all about Mama and God. She sat up and faced him as he seated himself on the large stone beside her. Papa, I am sorry. I don't know why I run away like that. There is something inside me that seems bigger than I. It drives me and makes me want to run away. But I'm glad you came to me, very glad. Papa placed his hand on hers, and they sat in silence for a while. Button was first to break it. Tell me, she said, about Mama. How can she talk to God? I have heard her say words into the air, as if God was a real person walking and standing right beside her. And she seems to get an answer, Papa. She just waits until she knows God has answered. Mama has always done things in a unique way, Button. If I were you, I'd concentrate on being myself and not trying to imitate Mama. Her talking is really praying. She just does it in an easy way, as naturally as breathing. If I did that, my voice couldn't carry a prayer. It would just find its way over the lake and be lost, lost in nothingness. Button, said Papa in a kind voice, God does speak to men. He always has, and he always will. In the Old Testament, he spoke to Moses in a burning bush, and to Elijah in a still, small, inner voice, and later in the Bible, to Paul in a great, shining light. All these men claimed that they heard a voice speaking, but others beside them heard none. God spoke, and they heard his voice in their souls. If you, dear, have something special on your heart to talk to God about, just talk to him as you talk to me. And I know that when the answer comes, you'll understand it. It's God's voice within your soul. Papa stood up. I'll leave you now. Leave you by yourself with your God. If you need me, I'll be in my study. Papa placed a light kiss on her cheek and walked up the hill toward the house. Button walked along the road by the lake toward the woodland. She walked slowly. Would she know the answer, as Papa had said she would, if she also prayed the way Mama did? Would God really answer if she prayed without kneeling and with her eyes open? Dear Father God, she heard herself say, you know all the things I'm thinking, and even the things I have hidden carefully deep down in my heart. Long ago, when I was a little girl, I had a dream of becoming an author and writing a book that would make people laugh and be happy. Please, God, make my dream come true. Help me to become a writer, God. Please. Please. The night was quiet around her, and slowly that tranquil stillness of peace floated into her soul. Her heart did not beat wildly as before, and so thoughts came to her mind, wonderful, beautiful thoughts that had not been there a moment ago. They came clear and fast as she could grasp them, and she put them into words, speaking them slowly and softly as she walked along. I will write a book someday. Nothing will stop me now because God will help me. I shall dream my dream so high, and it will be so lofty that it will reach a golden hill where God will keep it until I am ready to have it returned to me. I will eat it. I will sleep it. It will be so much a part of me that someday it will be fulfilled. God will fulfill it through me. Thank you. Thank you for answering my prayer. My dream is like a delicate flower which will blossom and give me joy in God's fullness of time. Button's feet had wings as they flew back to the farmhouse. She began remembering the time she had heard Mama talk to God, and now she understood it. She had been very small the first time she had heard it. Mama had gone upstairs to make the beds, and Button was playing in the big kitchen in the Lapland Parsonage. She knew Mama was alone upstairs, and yet she heard her speaking as though someone was with her. Perhaps, she thought, Mama is talking to me. She ran to the foot of the stairs and called, "Mama, did you talk to me?" And Button could still remember how surprised Mama had looked as she came to the landing and looked down at her with that warm smile on her lips, saying, "No, little one, I didn't talk to you. I was talking with God." Yes, she had wondered then how Mama did it, for she was so strict when her children prayed. They had to kneel and close their eyes and approach God in holiness and reverence. And here Mama herself had been walking around making beds, so she couldn't even have closed her eyes. Button could not understand it. Once Mama had been standing alone out on the lawn gazing upward while a fine rain came down on her blonde hair. But Mama did not seem conscious of the rain. Her whole face was beaming as Button heard her say, "God," and Mama had raised her voice a little as if it took more volume to penetrate the clouds. "You saw the lawn needed water. Thank you for sending the rain to do my watering for me as I was much too busy baking. A great big thank you, God." She had heard Mama ask God to bless the dough when she made bread. Bless it so the yield would be large enough to feed so many mouths. And she had asked him to keep the milk from souring in the hot summertime. "Father God, you know that my children don't like sour milk, but if it does sour, you know they would have to drink it, because we can't afford to waste it." Once while Mama was holding Pele's shoes in her hands, Button had overheard her talking to God as if she were scolding him. "God, you forgot to answer my prayer of last week concerning Pele's shoes. They are wearing out much too fast. Now I am asking you again, bless his shoes. He has such busy feet." Button remembered all these things. But she also remembered that Mama believed in her prayers with a childlike simple faith. Never would she forget the school morning she had awakened with a sore throat and her body wet with perspiration. She tried to swallow, but felt as if her throat was full of mashed potatoes mixed with gravel. She had sent Greta to fetch Mama so Mama could see she was in no condition to go to school. And Mama had come and placed her cool hand on Button's hot forehead. "You are real sick, Button Lala," said Mama, "poor girl." Button was thankful for Mama's sympathetic words. "I am too sick to go to school, Mama, and we're having a very important lesson. Now the teacher will never know how well I learned it." Mama asked all about her sickness. She shook her head as she looked at Button's throat. "Yes, you have a good dose of whatever it is, but we'll take care of it. You believe that God does not want little girls to be sick, don't you?" Button nodded. God cared about everybody. Papa said so. Mama placed her hand on Button's forehead and knelt down by the bed. Her prayer came hurriedly, as if she did not have too much time to spare on a busy morning with 7 children to feed and most of them to get ready for school. "Dear God," she prayed, "you see little Button here in bed, too sick to go to school where she has an important lesson. I think she has a little fever and a sore throat, but those things are nothing for you, God. So I ask you, please, to make her well immediately. Thank you for being so good to us. Amen." Mama gave Button a big smile, then left the room, closing the door softly behind her. Button snuggled down under the quilt. Despite the sore throat, it would be good to lie here under the covers and smell Mama's baking and listen to her singing as she went about her day's work. Perhaps she would make something specially good for Button since she was a sick girl. If she did, Button would try to swallow no matter how much it hurt. And Papa might play on the organ for her. He knew how much she enjoyed hearing him play and sing, and the door pushed open, and there stood Mama. "Button, what in the world are you doing in bed?" she asked the bewildered child, who now sat up and stared at her. "I am sick, Mama, remember? I have a sore throat and a fever. You couldn't have forgotten already. I told you about it just a few minutes ago." Mama took one step nearer Button's bed and pointed her finger at her daughter. "You were sick, Button," she corrected. "You did have a sore throat and a fever, but no more.
I prayed for you, didn't I? Get up this minute and go to school. Mama marched out of the room without a backward glance, and Button crawled slowly out of bed and dressed in her school clothes. She thought of her sore throat and how cold the Lapland air was. She felt sick most of the day, but she hardly dared to think about it, for that surely would be a sin after Mama had prayed for her. She shivered a little as she sat on her bench, but by the time she started home that afternoon, her sickness had left her. She simply could not return sick to the parsonage when Mama had prayed her well. Button smiled happily as she entered the farmhouse. What a wonderful night this had turned out to be. A heavy burden had been rolled upon her shoulders. God had taken her dream to keep for her until she was ready to write. No longer need she worry. It might take weeks or months or years, but in God's time, her dream would be fulfilled, and she would wait even if it took 100 years. That brings us now to book 2 and chapter 7, For Better or Worse. Years, thought Button, were like a broad road. Sometimes there were long stretches of straightness. Again, there would be twists and turns, and one could not see very far ahead. Then sometimes around a bend would be waiting a fine surprise, a golden sunset or a lovely lake. The first years in America had been like that, so different one from another. As Button had gone through the process of growing up, Mama had looked worriedly at her because there seemed to be no thoughts of marriage in Button's mind. Mama could not understand that Button was having a good time being bowed about by many a young man, but that as yet she had not met one who in any way resembled Gunner. Not that her heart any longer beat with rapture at the thought of him, the years had seen to that, but rather that she could not recapture the glow and sincerity and sweetness that had surrounded that first love. And then she met Eric Borge. Eric had been as different from Gunner as anyone could be, but for the first time a spark of the old romance had been kindled, and her heart had been warmed with a gentle yearning. That had been the beginning of a new era in her life. At the open window, white ruffled curtains fluttered in the warm summer breeze. Out in the huge oak trees, birds were singing their morning songs. There must be at least 100 of them, thought Button, as she let her head sink deeper into the soft white pillow. She lay very still so she would not awaken Eric, who slept close beside her. As she listened to his even breathing, her heart almost turned a somersault in sheer delight. She was deliriously happy in her role as a wife. She could hear the lazy lapping of the tiny waves along the shore. Across the lake, the white mountains towered against the sky. Last night, she and Eric had come upon the cabin bathed in moonlight. Never would she forget the thrill she felt as, leaning over her husband's shoulder, she saw him sign their names together for the first time. Mr. and Mrs. Eric Borge, he had written, and then turned and grinned at her as contentedly as though he owned the whole world. Button had returned a smile so radiant it proclaimed beyond a doubt that she was the world's happiest bride. She had married the man she loved, and this was their honeymoon. "Let's not make any plans, Eric," Button had suggested when they had discussed where they would go on their honeymoon. "We'll just get in your car and drive until we want to stop. Then we'll stay at the first tourist place we find. I bet when the people there see the happiness in our faces, they'll know we're honeymooners and offer us the very best accommodations." "That will suit me, Button," Eric had assured her and produced one of his rare warm smiles that penetrated right down to her toes. Eric was not a man of fancy words, nor was he the tall, dark man Button had dreamed her husband would be. If anyone had told her a year ago that she would marry Eric, she would have flatly denied it. She would have said, "Eric Borge is a fine person, kind, good-looking, and perhaps a little well-to-do. But wonderful as he is not the one for me." They had had few things in common.
and Eric was not one who wanted to become entangled in Button's dreams. But from the first, she had enjoyed his company, feeling secure in his presence. So she saw him frequently. Soon she found she was going out only with him. "I can't understand it," she had confided to Vicky, who at 17 was already married. "I don't know whether or not I love him. This feeling is so different from the one I had for Gunnar in Lapland." Vicky had patted her on the shoulder. "Don't worry, sister. One of these days you'll know if you love him enough to marry him, just as I did with John." And Button did know in her heart the night he had proposed to her. They were out riding. "Button," Eric said as he stopped the car beside a shimmering lake, "I want to tell you something strange. Although I've been taking girls out since I was old enough, there has never been a thought of marriage in my mind. I always wanted to be a bachelor. You're the first girl I ever wanted to marry. Will you marry me?" Button had laughed. "Why, Eric," she said, "if that is supposed to be a proposal, it certainly isn't a very romantic one. Don't you know you're supposed to sweep a girl off her feet, or at least take her in your arms to demonstrate your words?" He had looked at her for a long while, and then had started the car and driven on. "You are like all the rest," he said finally. "In your heart, you're laughing at me. Well, I won't ask you again, Miss Fronson. If you love me, you'll have to come to me." Without another word, he had driven her to the parsonage, escorted her to the door, and driven off with such speed that Mama had called out, "What in the world, Button? Did you and Eric have a fight?" "Oh, no, Mama, not at all. We're the best of friends. We might even get married." And Button had left Mama standing there just as perplexed as she herself felt. Inside, she had been fuming. Why, he could not treat her like that. She would never go to him. Never, never. Who did he think he was anyway? But she found that she was thinking of him day and night and hoping that he would call again. But 2 weeks passed and not a sign of him. Eric was a tool designer and an exceptionally fine one with an excellent income. He must have money in the bank, and he was rather handsome in an intense, serious way. Very rarely did his face break into a happy smile. He was of medium height with blonde hair. He, too, had been born in Sweden. That was one thing they did have in common, speaking their own country's language and talking about the old country they had left behind. "He needs me to make him happy," Button reasoned, "and I need him to keep me balanced. It would be good to find him waiting when she came back from her dream tours. Resting in his strong arms, she'd feel safe." So she waited and waited for his call, refusing to go out with other boys. And one night it came. "Button," said his voice on the telephone, "I couldn't hold out any longer. Will you come out with me tonight and look at the house I'd like to buy for our future home?" Eric is pretty sure of himself, she thought. But she felt very happy, so she went with him to see the little white bungalow with green shutters. To Button, it was almost like seeing her dream house in Lapland. Eric was kind, but he did not speak of marriage, although his strong arms around her and his kisses told her more than words. "Eric," Button had said that night, "you have to ask Papa for my hand if we are to get married. Also, you'll have to join the church, for it's understood in our household that we will marry only church people. And you?" He stopped her with a kiss. "I'll do both those things, dear. I want you, Button. Oh, I know it may be hard for me to fit into your large family or into your dreams, but somehow I must manage it. You know, Button, sometimes you seem to me like a lost bird flying around trying to find a warm nest. That's why I want to buy you a home, so you will always know where you belong." But Eric found he could not ask Papa for Button's hand. "I am scared," he confessed, "and anyway, that's old-fashioned. People don't do that anymore. We, you and I, are the ones who want to get married. What has your Papa to do with it?" "You'd be surprised," laughed Button. "One thing I surely know, you don't know my Papa." At Easter time, Eric joined Papa's church. Farm days were over and Papa had gone back to his life work. Papa was most happy to receive Eric into the fellowship of the church, for he was convinced that Eric was sincere in joining. Eric still refused, however, to ask Papa for Button's hand, so she finally had to help him. "Why don't you write Papa a letter, Eric?" she asked, the idea just having popped into her mind. "And if you don't know what to say, I can help you." "That's a good idea, Button," said Eric in a relieved voice. "Write it soon, will you?" After Button had finished the letter, she showed it to Eric. "Dear Pastor Fronson, I am writing to ask you a great favor, the greatest I have ever asked of a human being. Button and I love each other, and I would consider it the most wonderful thing in the world if I could make her my wife. I promise to be a good husband and, with God's help, to provide well for her. I shall count the moments until I receive your reply, which I hope will be favorable. With deepest respect, Eric Borch." "Why, Button, that's a good job. I couldn't have expressed it better myself. How in the world could you do it?" "Two things," smiled Button, "a mind and a heart. Now you must copy it in your handwriting and mail it to Papa." It did not take Papa long to have a talk with Button and to return a favorable reply to the overjoyed Eric, and by Christmas time, Button wore a sparkling diamond on her finger. Eric purchased the white bungalow, and the two of them spent every spare moment picking out furniture and getting ready for a June wedding. What wonderful memories these happy, happy days made! Now Button looked over at Eric, noting his strong, fine features. He was her dear husband, and happy as she was, of that she was certain. Of course, he had been pretty nervous on the wedding day, and they were both relieved when it was over. Eric was not a man who sought out the limelight, so different from her own family, where each person seemed destined to be in some position that dealt with the public. Well, she would get accustomed to this new life and learn to love it. The wedding had been so beautiful. Poor Papa, having two weddings so close. Vicky's and hers had been hard on his purse strings, but he had not complained when he had seen the light in Button's eyes. "After all," he had said to Button, "our family can use a man who knows how to work with his hands." Mama, of course, had cried all through the ceremony, and the tears had been streaming down her cheeks when she had kissed them goodbye. "Be good to her, Eric," she had whispered. "I declare she can sometimes be a pack of trouble." Papa had shaken Eric's hand so hard Button was afraid it would fall right off. "Eric, my son," Papa had said in his preaching voice, "you are getting one of the nicest girls that ever was born. Oh, she might be up to mischief. She always was. But your life will never be dull with Button beside you." Dear Papa, how good he had been. Button knew that both Papa and Mama had been a bit disappointed that she had not married a minister. Perhaps they wondered how she would get along in such a complete change of environment. But Eric was smart, and they felt he would go a long way in his line, and as far as worldly goods were concerned, Button would have much more than Vicky, who had married a preacher. So Papa and Mama had given Eric and Button their blessing with hearts overflowing. At the close of the wedding reception, Eric and Button had slipped away to begin their honeymoon journey. Eric was proud of his shiny new car, but they had not gone very far when Button, sitting close beside him, said in a wistful voice, "Oh, Eric, I can't bear to think of our little dream house being alone on our wedding night. It will have its arms stretched out in a warm welcome, but no one will come up that walk unless some... Do you think we can turn back? I'd so much rather stay in our own home tonight and start our trip tomorrow. Am I being foolish, Eric, when we are already on our way? But, darling, being in our own place would be heavenly." Eric had turned the car around and headed for home. He was as glad as Button was to spend the first night of his married life in his own home. Thus, in the evening dusk, they had stood outside their bungalow, gazing at the red geraniums blossoming in the window boxes beneath the front windows, and at the roses which Eric had planted that spring, climbing up the porch trellis. Eric, full of pride, took out the new key, but Button held him back. "Wait, darling," she whispered. "Let's just stand here and take it all in for a few minutes. And then, as we walk toward the door, hold me very, very close." She needed his comforting arms around her as she started this new life. What would it be like? Would she always be as happy as this? Would they have little ones running around in this house, pressing their noses against the window panes? Would Eric learn to smile more? And would she be the good wife she wanted to be? As Eric opened the door, they stopped. "Would you think me queer if I ask that we kneel, Eric?" Button asked. "Not at all, honey. I'll do anything to make you happy," answered Eric, holding her hand tightly in his. Button remembered Mama telling how she and Papa had knelt at the threshold before entering their home in Lapland when they had returned as newlyweds. She had always wanted to do the same. They knelt and prayed silently that God would bless them and everyone who entered their door. Then Eric carried her across the threshold and kissed her tenderly. "Welcome home, Miss Borch," he said with a strange catch in his husky voice. Certainly everything had been perfect. Blessings unnumbered were pouring down upon them. She was sure Eric would be the kindest and most thoughtful husband in the whole world. Now, lying here in the big bed in the log cabin, she remembered how Eric and she had wandered through their home that night before last, and she had touched each new thing caressingly. They had planned where to place the numerous wedding presents that would add so much to their new home. How spotlessly clean their house was. They must always keep it so. No discord, no ugly words, no complaints, no criticism. Just joy and love and laughter for years and years until eternity began. So they crept into their new mahogany bed, whispering lover sweet nothings to each other. Button had bubbled over with words. "Darling," she murmured with her cheek pressed close against her husband's, "promise me you'll live to be 111 years old, because I could never think of life without you, Eric." He laughed heartily. "Why do you laugh?" Button asked, a tiny bit annoyed. "Oh, I was thinking that you would be 103 that fall, and a picture flashed through my mind of how you would look." "Now, that wasn't even kind of you, Eric," she scolded, "and surely not a bit romantic. Don't you know that to you I shall always be beautiful because love is ageless? Oh, Eric, you must learn to say pretty things to me. And do you know what? I would simply fold up and die if you stopped loving me." Eric kissed the frown from her forehead and held her so close she could hear his heart beating wildly. "Honey," he said seriously, "you have to learn to accept me as I am. And I am not a man of flowery words. I am not capable of feeding you those pretty phrases you seem to crave. It's too hard for me to get them out, Button. I want you to understand this about me from the beginning. But, dear, you will learn that there are other ways besides words in which a man shows his beloved that he loves her. Love is also measured by the way he acts and what he does for her. Thank you for telling me, Eric, the first night. That was very wise of you. Now I will understand you, so please don't worry about it." In the morning, they had driven toward the White Mountains in beautiful, picturesque New Hampshire. And that night in the moonlight, they had seen the vacancy sign on the log cabin by the big lake. They both felt they must have been divinely led to this spot, for they couldn't have found a prettier place to spend their honeymoon. Yes, life was wonderful, and Eric would make a fine husband and father. God would bless them as he had blessed Mama and Papa. Button touched Eric lightly on the cheek. "Wake up, sleepyhead," she whispered. "It's morning. Even 111 years are too short to live if we're going to waste them sleeping." Eric reached out his arms and drew her close. "Already you have become a very disturbing wife. But you are as adorable as you are crazy. I know now what your papa meant when he said my life would never be dull living with his daughter." That first year was heavenly, and there certainly wasn't one dull moment. To Button, marriage was far more than she had ever dreamed it could be. Every day, Eric became dearer, and she learned that underneath his reserved manner, he hid much goodness. It shone out in so many little ways, but most of all, Button felt secure in his strength. Yes, Eric and she belonged to each other. God had made them for each other. He was a perfect husband, and they would sail through life on a calm sea, and someday there would be children to share their happiness. Button needed only to close her eyes, and she could hear the sound of children's voices. In her mind, she had already turned one of the rooms into a dainty nursery. Tired as he was, Eric would come home with a glow on his face and stop in the kitchen doorway while she flew into his outstretched arms. Life would always be like this for them, even when they were both old. She would keep it this way and would never lose the thrill of feeling that pressure of his fingers which he had told her meant, "I love you, darling." No, they would always treasure this perfect happiness which hovered over their home like a thousand angel wings. In those first few months with Mama as her teacher, Button learned to be a good housekeeper. And Mama also told her how to handle a husband the right way. One of the most important things Mama had advised as they sat in the sunshine on Button's front step one clear October afternoon when Mama had come for lunch is always to have the dinner ready when your man comes home from work. Have the table set as perfectly as though you expected company, the silver straight, and a centerpiece of flowers or something green. This adds so much to the meal. You see, Button, dear, it's the small things that make a house into a home. Eric should smell rolls baking and coffee percolating as he comes up the walk at night. He should know that loving arms will greet him and that busy hands have prepared everything for his comfort. Thus, he can leave his burdens outside the door and forget his weariness from the strain of work. He should feel that here he is king and this is his castle. I love to hear you tell me these things, Mama. I guess a woman who does all those things will never lose her husband's love. No, of that I am sure, continued Mama happily. And don't forget, my dear, that the nicest music to a hungry man's ears is the clatter of pots and pans in the kitchen. It makes a man feel important. God made him that way, so never blame him for it. When you promised in your marriage vow to reverence your husband, it did not mean that you would gaze at him adoringly night and day as some people do at a preacher in the pulpit. No, it meant that you would darn his socks, wash and starch his shirts, have his meals ready, and give him plenty to eat. Also, it meant that you would keep yourself clean and pleasant smelling, using a little touch of perfume behind the ear on the side of the face you turned toward him to kiss. Oh, Mama, you are so clever. I'll never forget your advice. Button was especially glad she had not married a minister, so she would have had to live in a parsonage the way Vicky did, even if Vicky thought that was part of heaven. It takes a lot of living to make a house a homey place, Button, insisted Vicky. Just think of the generations of people who must have lived in this old parsonage. Here people have laughed and cried for almost 100 years. Its wooden arms have sheltered them in joy and through sorrow. It possesses character, style, memories. I'm not a bit envious of your new bungalow. But our house belongs to us, Vicky. Someday it too will be old, but we are the ones to begin its story. Here we came on our wedding night. We were the first to ask God's blessing upon it. Here I cooked our first meal, and in time, here I'll hold our first baby in my arms. And it is small, so small that when we're away from it, we can hold it in the palm of our one hand. We will have years and years to pour our love into it. Well, they were both contented and satisfied with what they had, and that was the important thing. Every object in their homes was hallowed, and what could it be otherwise when in each all was peace and joy and love? There was something Button had carried with her from Sweden that she wished she could have left behind. It was a sense of fear about America. People there had told her hair-raising stories of murders, kidnappings, and burglaries, which happened all the time. She had tried to drive these stories from her mind, but on nights when Eric worked very late, they came back to haunt her. One day she read about an axe murder which had taken place in their community, and although she did not mention it to Eric, she was almost overcome with fear. What would stop a man like that from coming into their little home in the silence of the night and murdering them both? She knew it was a horrid thought, and that Eric would be very cross if he knew that she let things like that take possession of her mind. She tried to think of happy things, but when she was alone, her mind would wander back to the murder, and she would shake like a leaf. Her imagination built the fear up more and more. It was best to be on guard at all times, but how? So the idea came to her. No one would be able to sneak up on Eric and her as they were peacefully sleeping in their bed if she secured the door. The next day, Button purchased a large brass hook and ring from the hardware store and fastened them in their proper places. She wondered what Eric would say about it. She wouldn't tell him, but would hook the door after he was in bed. If he happened to catch her, she'd just have to explain that she hadn't been able to sleep because of the fear that possessed her. Eric would surely pamper her about the hook. He had to. Eric did not see Button slipping the hook on the door that night, but in the morning they were awakened by a severe thunderstorm. She had awakened before Eric, having enjoyed undisturbed sleep for the first time in weeks. She was lying in bed thinking that the hook really did not detract too much from the look of the door, when Eric opened his eyes and spotted it. "Button," he cried, "how did that hook get on the door?"
"I put it there," said Button meekly.
"Do you mean to tell me that you hammered a huge hook into our expensive woodwork? How could you do a thing like that, and what in the world for?" Never before had Button heard Eric speak to her in that tone of voice. Her heart sank. Perhaps he would not understand after all. Better tell him the truth. "I put it there so we wouldn't be murdered at night when we were sleeping. I've been terribly frightened ever since the axe murder. I had to do something." Eric sat up in bed. He was furious. "Are you implying that I am not capable of protecting you? Do you think I am a mouse? And there you are sleeping right beside me. What do you think people will think when they see that hook? They'll think I am as frightened as you. It's ridiculous. I shall remove it at once."
"You will do nothing of that kind, Mr. Brooks. When other couples get murdered in their beds, you'll thank God you had a wife smart enough to take precautions against it. If you touch that hook, I'll walk out of this house and never come back."
"Okay, I suppose that hook will have to stay. It will remain as a symbol of the disgrace of my manhood and the foolishness of your womanhood. It has been like that since Adam and Eve. A woman loves to make a fool of a man." Button stared at her husband. The stinging tears were hard to keep back, but she wouldn't allow herself to cry. She looked at him with eyes full of hurt pride and contempt. "I think you are horrid," she blurted out. Eric neither answered nor looked her way. He dressed quickly, walked through the hall and kitchen, and without eating breakfast, he opened the door and slammed it hard behind him. Not a word of goodbye had come from him. Button dressed slowly. She let the tears fall now. Her whole beautiful dream world had tumbled down. Everything was spoiled. The ugly words had come. Their house was not the same. Would never be the same. Eric was not perfect. He was very human and had a terrible temper. No one in the parsonage would ever have walked out like that. Or if he did, a few minutes later he would have been on his knees asking God and the injured one's forgiveness. Now everything she considered sacred in their home had been desecrated by Eric's act. What should she do? Button searched her own heart carefully and honestly. Could she help it if she was frightened by the gruesome things she read in the newspaper? Wasn't it Eric's duty to love and understand, for better or for worse? Then suddenly a wild desire to write came over her. Soon her pen was flying over the paper at a furious rate, the words coming so fast that she had a hard time holding them back. The story she wrote was about a young girl who thought she had married a perfect man, but after a year of married life discovered his imperfections. There had been a big quarrel about a minor thing, and the husband had left the house without eating his breakfast or kissing the wife goodbye, and he had slammed the door behind him. The young wife was sitting in her living room thinking of what an ill-tempered, inconsiderate, selfish brute of a male she had married when the doorbell rang twice. Carefully wiping the tears from her eyes, she had opened the door, and there on the steps stood a boy with a big box, which he handed her. Upon opening it, she found it contained 2 dozen beautiful red roses. "Oh, my husband is sorry he hurt me this morning," the wife said to herself, while all the bitterness she had felt completely vanished away. "This is his way of saying that he wants me to forgive him. Now I must go him one better. I'm not going to let him know that the flowers have come, but I'll telephone him to say how sorry I am for my part in the argument. I'll admit I was wrong. I'll forgive him, and he'll be happy again, thanks to the red roses." The husband seemed very surprised when she called him, but they made up and all was well. In a few minutes, she would call him back and thank him for the roses. As she put back the receiver, the bell rang again, and there stood the same boy, looking flushed and embarrassed. "Lady," he stammered, "will you forgive the awful mistake I made in delivering the roses to you? I lost the card and thought I remembered the correct house number, but I just found the card, and I should have given them to the lady next door." As Button wrote, time and space were forgotten, and even the unhappiness Eric had caused her dissolved into thin air. All her clouds had vanished, and once again she was basking beneath a blue heaven. After the story was finished, and she had given it a happy ending, she placed it in an envelope and mailed it to a magazine. Perhaps, after all, this was a day of good luck, and she had needed a jolt to make her write a story. After the envelope was mailed, she took courage and called Eric. "Eric," she said sweetly, "this is the naughty girl you married a year ago. I got lonesome for my husband." "Is that because there is a bad man in the house?" he asked teasingly. But she was laughing, and Button knew his anger had gone. "I've removed the hook, Eric, and filled in the holes with plastic wood. Then I rubbed some polish over the spots, and they are hardly noticeable. Am I forgiven?" "Of course. After all, since this was my wife's first offense, I'll have to be lenient. But you'll have to promise not to tear down my manly pride again." "I promise, Eric, and there'll be steak waiting tonight. Why don't you ask your boss to come for dinner?" "Don't tell him I suggested it, and will he be surprised when he sees what a delicious meal I've prepared? He'll wish he wasn't a bachelor, and will propose to the first girl he sees just to get a wife, after having had a sample of your wife's cooking." "Perhaps I will ask Mr. Nord, Button. He may think that we have steaks every meal, but let me tell you something, Miss Bort. You are the world's biggest schemer. But I don't mind as long as your schemes include a steak." Button hung up the receiver. The world was fine again. She was sure her story would sell. She would indeed cook the biggest steak her money would buy for Mr. Nord and her husband. Chapter 8 is entitled The Angel. Button's story was accepted by the small magazine to which she had sent it, and she received a check for $5 with the request for further stories of a similar type. This made her so happy she felt as if she could go dancing on clouds. With the money, she bought a heavy doorstop, which she told Eric would always stand by their bedroom door as a reminder to her not to fasten any more hooks on it. The first year of their marriage had flown by so swiftly as if it had wings, and again it was summer. Eric and Button, with Vicky and John, had rented a summer cottage for 2 weeks. The White Mountains had been the choice of Eric and Button, since there they could relive their honeymoon days. The 2 weeks were much too short, and Button found it unbearable to think of going back to the city heat. "I still have 2 more weeks' vacation," said John a couple of days before their time was up. "If this place hasn't been rented, why don't we stay another 2 weeks, and you, Eric, could drive up for weekends? It may be hard on you, but at least it would give you 2 long weekends here." "Poor Eric," sighed Button. "That's the only time I wish you were a preacher, when vacation time comes round." "I'll live through it," laughed Eric, who looked brown and rested, "and it will be wonderful for you, Button. Let's go and ask if we can have it for 2 more weeks. They returned with good news and settled down for another 2 weeks of stimulating mountain air. Without Eric, the week seemed endless to Button, and when Friday night finally came, she announced that she would walk up the road to meet her husband. She couldn't wait to be in his arms again. She tied a bandana tightly around her hair. A fine rain was falling, but the clouds were breaking, and it looked as if the rain might cease at any moment. Darkness was beginning to fall like a dark veil over the woodland, so Button walked fast. Now and then a bird chirped, and far in the distance a dog was barking. From the lake came the gay voices of young people who were swimming despite the rain and darkness. Oh, how Button longed for the sound of Eric's car. He simply must come before it got too dark, or how would she find her way back without a flashlight? How foolish of her to have forgotten to take one along. But she walked bravely on, for surely Eric would come at any moment, and he would be proud to see that she had walked all this way by herself just to meet him. She must have walked at least a full mile. This was a very special night, so special that only God in heaven and she knew the importance of it. She sat down by the edge of the road to rest a while, drinking in the scent of fresh pine. Would Eric be glad to hear the news? And how was she to break it to him? She could say, "Eric, the most wonderful thing in the world has happened to us, the miracle of the ages from the beginning of time. You and I are going to be parents. And do you know what? It's going to be a Christmas present or a New Year's one anyway. Isn't it wonderful?" Or perhaps she would just put her arms around his neck and kiss him and whisper, "I am about to become the mother of your firstborn, Mr. Borks." Or better yet, she could just look deep into his eyes and let him read the secret in hers, for by now she was sure it was written all over her face. A joy like hers could not be concealed. It had been a strain to wait all these weeks to tell him, but she had wanted to be absolutely sure first, and Mama had said, "When you feel life, then you are sure, Button." She had shared her news with Mama, Vicky, and Greta, but Eric? Well, she had wanted to be without a doubt before she told him. And now, just today, it had happened. Button had been having a good swim in the cool, clear water and had sat down on the dock to dry off. A beautiful bluebird had flown to a branch not far from where she was sitting. It sat there looking down upon her, and then, for the first time, she felt something stir within her like the lifting of a tiny finger, and then she felt it more pronounced, like a tiny ball rolling over. Oh, it had brought tears to Button's eyes, and she had offered a prayer of thanksgiving for her happiness. Then she had gone up to the cottage to tell Vicky. Button had stood there gazing into Vicky's blue eyes and then embraced her sister. "Vicky," she cried, "I felt it. It's real. So tiny. But it let me know it really is there. I'm so happy I could die." And Vicky had kissed her. "God bless you," she had whispered. It had seemed to Button that night would never come. With night would come Eric, and she would tell him her secret and need no longer keep it locked in her heart. The rain had stopped. A lone bird twittered in the tall treetop. The air felt fresh and pure. She took a deep breath and filled her lungs with mountain air. "For my little one," she smiled. From now on, she would always think of that new little life first, how much she loved it already. And now Eric, too, could share this new love. She could hear a car coming down the twisting road. Her heart almost stopped with joy. It was he. It was Eric. She tore off her bandana and waved it.
Eric stopped the car and opened the door. "Hi. How about a lift for a tired hiker?" she laughed. "Why, Button, how did you dare to venture this far into the woods by yourself? But it's a very pleasant surprise, indeed." She seated herself close beside him, and he kissed her hungrily. "I had to meet you, Eric. I was terribly lonesome." "That's fine, honey. I like to have you get lonesome for your husband." They drove in silence, thankful to be together again. Then, "Eric, don't you think it would be nice for me to have a little son to walk with me?" Eric laughed. "No," he said teasingly. "Positively not. I don't want any competition, at least not for many years." Button's heart stood still with fear. Eric did not want a baby. How could she tell him now? Why had he spoiled it all? Her sensitive, foolish heart ached, and her throat was full of crying. She pulled herself away from him, almost hugging the door. "I don't care what you want, Eric," she blurted out. "You are going to have a baby whether you want one or not. Because there isn't a thing you can do about it now." Eric slammed on the brakes. "Button, you silly little girl. Do you realize we almost had an accident? Do you think that's a kind way to break such news to an expectant father?" "Do you really mean it, dearest? Are you sure? I couldn't take it if you were fooling me." There were tears in Eric's eyes, real tears, and Button felt that she had reached a joy so divine it could not belong to this earth alone. The world became topsy-turvy. Everything was centered around one thing, the baby, December, Christmas. Eric was the most tender, expectant father Button had ever seen. It was as if he had been transformed. All the mirth that had been held back by his reserved nature suddenly exploded. He was a happy man. Button forgot about her writing. This new experience so completely dominated her that she poured every ounce of her strength into creating a nursery so beautiful and sweet that it would have been fit for a prince. For the little white crib, she embroidered a bedspread, showing diminutive angels showering roses down from a blue sky. Weeks of work went into the scarf that covered the small bureau and into the white ruffled curtains which were tied back with wide pink satin bows. Eric bought a daybed for the nursery, saying to Button, "For you, darling, I know you'll want to be near the baby when you first come home from the hospital. It will be so helpless then, you won't want to leave it alone." Button made some fluffy pillows to throw up on the bed so it would not look so large amid the baby things. 3 months before she was due to have the baby, all was in readiness, and the nursery became to her almost as sacred as a shrine. Each day she knelt and prayed by the little crib, asking that the new life might be healthy and happy and good. Then Button had to face her first disappointment in connection with the nursery. There was to be a big convention held in Papa's church, and delegates would be coming from near and far. Thus, Mama came on a special errand to see Button on a sunny November morning. "Button," said Mama, as she sat drinking coffee in her daughter's spotless kitchen, "I informed the convention committee yesterday that I knew that you and Eric would be glad to take one of the delegates for a couple of nights. We have so many people coming that we have to make use of every available place. Everyone who has a space at all has volunteered to take at least one guest. We are having 7 in the parsonage for 4 days. Your guest will be an elderly farm lady, and I am sure she will just love to sleep in your little nursery." Button, her eyes getting bigger and bigger, stared at her mother. "Mama, you can't mean that. Not that we shall ask an old lady to sleep in our baby's nursery." "Oh, she won't mind that it is a nursery, Button. She'll be grateful to have so nice a place to stay." "Well, I should say she won't mind." Button was so upset she could hardly speak. "I should say she would be very comfortable, indeed. Only, she's not going to be. No one is going to sleep in the nursery until the baby has slept in it first." Mama looked at Button a long time without answering, but under her steady gaze, Button lived through the years of her childhood.
She saw the endless line of people who had been guests in the parsonage, a strange crowd of crippled and sick ones, but also those happy and well. She knew that Mama never closed the door to anyone as long as there was one place left to crowd someone in. And she always served her guests the best the house could afford. That was Mama's way of serving God. Finally, Mama smiled. "Button," she said kindly, "I'm sure you're not a foolish, selfish girl. You certainly are not going to keep an old lady from realizing her dreams of coming to the convention because of your emotionalism over an unborn baby. Think upon this seriously before you reply. But, little one, let me tell you that there will be a special blessing coming to you if you open your home to Mrs. Frankenberg." Button lived through agony until Eric came home from work. He found her snuggled up on the daybed in the nursery, her eyes red with weeping and no supper prepared. Sobbing, she threw herself into his arms and told him this whole story. The lines on Eric's forehead deepened as he tried to solve this new problem. "Never mind, Button," he finally said. "Dry your tears and let old Mrs. Brandenburg come. That is better than having to have trouble with Mama. You know very well that if Mama has made up her mind that we are going to have that old woman in our nursery, no power on earth can stop her." "But, Eric, it's so unfair. This is our house and our baby and our nursery. Mama has no right to interfere." Eric took his handkerchief and wiped away the falling tears, and in no time he had convinced her that there was no other way out of this situation but to cater to Mama's wishes. Mrs. Frankenberg proved to be a very happy, talkative old lady, and because she lived in the country, she was delighted with all the things of the city. "I'm going to spend as much time at the meetings as I need to bring back a report to our church," she informed Button, "but I'm also going to do all my Christmas shopping. I was pretty lucky to have been chosen delegate from our group. It had never happened before." "I'm glad you could come," replied Button, wondering if she was telling a lie, though she really felt better about the whole affair now that she saw how truly delighted the old lady was. Mrs. Frankenberg was thrilled with all the wonderful things she could buy in the Berkeley Hills stores, and she came home with bundle after bundle. Button wondered if she got to church at all.